श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री गिरिराज महाराज की जय, श्री श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्र की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि वो So, good evening to all of you. Welcome, those connected online as well. Thanks for your presence and sorry for the delay. We have some technical difficulties, and here we are. So, we are continuing today with our series of lectures on the prayers of Brahma, Sri Brahma Stuti. Today is meeting number 20, and we will be studying verse 18. But as usual, let's make a brief recap of what we saw 2 days ago, which was verse 17, where we were speaking that how the outside and the inside of Krishna, in one sense, is the same. So Brahma is saying in that verse, verse 17, he said, just as this entire universe, including you, appear within your belly, so it is now manifested here externally in the same exact form. How could such things happen unless arranged by your Maya? So of course, when in this case, when Brahma is referring to Krishna, in relation to your Maya, means your Yoga Maya in this case, which is creating this unique situation of simultaneous. Referring to Yashoda, remember this verse is connected to what Yashoda saw in Krishna's mouth. He saw a whole universe, she saw herself there, she saw Krishna there, and she saw the universe outside of him as well. And again, our acharyas mentioned this possibility that, well, maybe one could say that the inside universe is a mere reflection of the outside universe. But we could say, no, it's not possible because we gave some reasons. When you have a reflection, the reflected image, how it appears?
Opposite.
Yeah, reverse, basically. No? Also, we say that the reflection is of a three-dimensional item is two-dimensional. But this was not the experience of Yashoda. She was seeing exactly three-dimensional in both cases, not reversed. As we said, only visible objects are reflected in a mirror, not aromas and touch and the other sense functions. But this was not the case. And as we say, if you want to say that one was the reflection of the other and Krishna was in between the two as the mirror, generally you don't see the mirror in the mirror. No. But in this case, Yashoda saw the mirror Krishna, if you will, inside the so-called reflection. So Yashoda thought in this moment, maybe this is a dream, but then she realized, no, it's not a dream, because everything is normal. It's not like in a dream. It's maybe an illusion of the gods or something, but this is not the case, because only me is perceiving this, not everyone else. It's my bewildering intelligence, maybe. But she realized, no, this is not the fact. Or maybe she concluded, maybe this is Krishna's mystic power. In her Vatsalya psychology. He's blessed to do some extraordinary things by the grace of Narayan and so on. And that was the option. Of course, Krishna's mystic powers, in the eye of Yashoda, actually, for us, refer to his Yogamaya potency, or Achintya Shakti. And of course, with all this that Brahma is bringing, all these points, he tries to make the case, okay, so the inside universe, the universe that is inside of you, is real. It's not a reflection. So everything exists inside of you. In that sense, you are like a mother, and you are like a womb, and everything is inside your womb, me included. So like a child inside the womb of the mother may kick sometime her mother, and the mother won't be offended by that. Similarly, you are my mother. Please do not be offended by my little kicking in the form of my mischief some minutes ago when I tried to kidnap your cubs and friends and interrupt your picnic. So basically that was what the ultimate intention and implications of in Brahma's verse. And today Brahma continues relating his own experience about Krishna's body. He went to Yashoda's experience for some verses. Now he's coming back to his own experience had some minutes ago. So we will go to today's verse for this, which is verse 18. We have it here in our whiteboard. So I'll share with you also in the screen here in two parts because it's a pretty long one. It's in 1 meter or chanda called Sardula Bikriditam. Sardula Bikriditam. So I will read it. I'll read it all in a row myself, and then if you want, we can try it line by line. I read the one line and you read it. But first I will read it myself so you can get accustomed to the endings of the lines. Next time it would be good to separate each line. Because if not, it's difficult for the ones reading to know where it's ending, each one of the four lines. So better to put 1, 2, 3, 4. But anyhow, you will follow me. Somehow. It says like this. Adhaiva, adhaiva, tarite, shamkim, manate, mayatma, darshitam, ekosi, pratamam, tato, brajasuhrit, vatsasamastapi, tavantu, si, chaturbhujastadakilai. Sakam mayo pasitas tavantiva jagantyabhustadamitam brahmadvayam sishyati. That's one of the different melodies to recite this meter, which is the same meter of the first verse of Sikshastakam or the Sad Goswami Astakam. So certain songs and verses are there. So I'll recite the first line. We will try our best. Advaiva tvarite syakim manate mayatvama darshitam. Advaiva tvarite syakim manate mayatvama darshitam. Ekosi pratamam tato brajasuhrit. Vatsa samastapi ekosi pratamam tato brajasuhrit vatsa samastapi tavantu si chaturbhujastadakilai sakam mayo pasitas. Tavanto si chatur bhujastadakilai sakam mayo pasitas. Tavantyeva jagantya bhustadamitam brahmadvayam sishyate. Tavantyeva jagantya bhustadamitam Brahma Dvayam Shishyate. Okay, very good. So the English translation of the verse says like this. So Brahma is again referring to, speaking to Krishna, saying, have you not shown me today that apart from you, all this universe is just the work of Maya? At first, you were alone, and then you became all of Vrindavan's calves and cowherd boys, your friends. Then all of them became four-armed forms worshipped by everyone, including me. Later, you became exactly that many universes. And now, all that remains is that one immeasurable, non-dual Brahman. So, this is today's verse. We'll go a little bit first word by word as usual, and then we will go through the different explanations. So the first expression says Adya Eva. Again, in how the words play out in the verse, they will appear differently because of Sandhi, Adya Eva. When you put this word separate, it's Adya Eva. So Adya Eva means on this very day. So with this Brahma showing, he will speak about something that happened that day, which is what happened some minutes ago, all the display that Brahma saw. So Adya Eva means on this very day. So he goes back again from Yashoda's situation to his own case. Tvat rite, which means apart from you, asya, means of this, referring universe, of this universe. Kim means weather. Mama means to me. Na means not. Na, te, by you. Mayaton means the basis is your maya. So this anadarshitam, shown. So he presents like some rhetorical question in the beginning, saying like, on this very day, have you not shown me how, apart from you, all this universe is the work of Maya? Of course, implying, yes, indeed you did. Then second line says, Eka, which means alone. Asi, in this case, means are, and you are. Pratamam. So now Brahma starts to describe the sequence, what Brahma just saw. In the beginning, you alone. Prataman means at first. At first it was you alone. Tata means after that. Braja Surit Batsa. The cubs and the friends of Braj. Samastaha. All. So he expanded into all this. Api means also. Tavantaha means of the same number. So all of these were there. Asi means you became. Chatubhuja means 400 forms of Vishnu, Tat, after that, so after seeing cubs and boys expanded, all of them became four-armed forms. Akilai means by all, Sakammaya, with me, Upashitaha, which were worshipped. So all these Vishnu forms that I saw were worshipped by everyone, including me, and I was seeing that. So that's astonishing enough. Tavantieva, exactly that many, so proportionate to the numbers of boys and calves, there were forms of Vishnu, and Jaganti, universes. There were a corresponding number of universes for all these forms at the same time. And if that's not enough, overwhelming enough, Abuhu, you became then, Tat means after that, Amitam, unlimited, Brahma, Advayam, Shishyate. Brahma means Brahman, the Absolute. Advayam means non-dual. Shishyate means remains. So at the end, all that remained was you, who are the non-dual Brahman. Of course, we will explain why Brahma is referring to Krishna as Brahman here. But basically, to make the point, you are non-dual. Although you seem to expand in many different forms, all of them were you, non-dual. So again, Brahma is returning to his epiphany of some minutes ago, sequence by sequence. So let's begin sharing what my Guru Maharaj has revealed in his Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubad, which will be included in his forthcoming book, which basically replicates what the verses has just said, but it's never enough to repeat it again, so I'll read it. So Brahma is again speaking to Krishna and asking, have you not just shown me that both you, yourself, and everything within this creation are manifestations of your inconceivable potency? Mayatvam. At first you appeared alone, and then you manifested yourself as all of your cubs and friends of Braja. Braja Surit Batsa. Then those calves and friends appeared as an equal number of four-handed Vishnu forms worshipped by all, including myself. And after that, you appeared as an equal number of universes. Finally, you reappeared in your original form, demonstrating that you yourself are the unmeasurable, non-dual, ultimate reality, Brahman. So this is Bhaktivedanta Bhavanuvad. Just to rebound the post, reconfirm this astonishing view, revelation that Brahma just has seen. He goes part by part of all that he's seen. So Krishna, let's go for a minute to this situation that we described at the very beginning of our series, before the prayers, what happened in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. So Krishna was one, and Brahma tried to kidnap the boys and the calves. He thought he did, but Krishna expanded an equal number of those unlimited boys and unlimited calves with exactly the same personal features of each of them, on the specific earrings and hair style and turban color, all the details externally and all details internally, their psychology. Now, with this showing how well he knew each of them. So Brahma returned after a year, earthly year, and he expected to see Krishna dejected, miserable, suffering without his friends and calves for a year. Try to imagine, that would be too much for Krishna. So that was not a joke what Brahma tried to do. Imagine Krishna without his friends and calf for a whole year. It's almost like attempting to kill him. But it's another way of putting that. But Brahma was surprised, of course, instead to see that... I mean, he basically witnessed the exact same scene that he saw when he left. Krishna was with his friend, the calves. And when he returned, Krishna was with his friends and the calves. So it seems like nothing happened in between. And he thought, but I kidnapped them all. But Krishna was with the boys and the calves grazing. It was like going back to the past, if you will, having like a deja vu of what happened a year before on earth. And as we know, Brahma started to analyze the set of calves and boys. And he went back to the cave, the illusory cave that was there, that he thought the real cows and boys, calves and boys were there. And he analyzed them. He went back and he compared. And he could find no difference between the two. And in the beginning, as we know, he thought, maybe they are the same set and Krishna's running faster than me and taking them to one side and to the... But then realized, no, this is not happening. So let's analyze the two of them. They're exactly the same. There is not any difference. Indeed, Brahma at one point thought, I cannot determine which is the original set. If one of the two are illusory, I don't know which is the one of the two, because they look exactly the same. Like the worlds outside and inside of Krishna, when Yashoda was looking, it's like they're equal, they're no reflection of one another. And as we know, at this point, Brahma's first head started to spin. And to make his second head spin, from each one of these calves and boys, four-handed forms of Vishnu start to appear. And not only that, but he saw all these Chaturbhuj Vishnu Murtis worshipped by the time element, by the different yoga siddhis or mystic perfections personified, were there worshipping those forms, the different Buddhas or material tattvas or material elements personified were worshipping those forms, many Brahmas were worshipping those forms. Brahma himself saw himself worshipping those forms. Time personified. So at one point, the scene became so intense that Brahma had to close his eyes. Try to imagine. If you are looking at something that is so intense, in this case, regarding majesty, it was too much. So Brahma had to close his 8 eyes. Although he was looking with 2 of them, but just in case he's close. He was witnessing the most extreme show of expression of Aishwarya. I mean, we will never find any greatest Aishwarya in the whole Vedic canon than what is shown in this Brahma Vimohan Lila. And on top of that, as we know, Brahma closed his eyes, and when he opened his eyes, Krishna had wrapped up the whole display of majesty. And Krishna saw everything as normal. Brahma saw everything as normal, if you want to put it like that, which was Krishna looking for his friends with a morsel of food in his hand. So that's when Brahma fell, as we know, from the swan and started to offer this Brahma stuti. So the point is, Brahma is remembering all this here. At this point, it's remembering all that happened a few minutes ago, but it's too intense to stop remembering that. He's remembering that over and over and over again. And as we said, his insights about the nature of Krishna, the nature of Krishna's form, are increasing one burst after another. He's showing us the way, how we should pray to Krishna. At every verse, some new insight is coming. So, anyhow, let's go to some of the old, ancient commentaries on this verse, starting with Srila Sridhar Swami. Ancient, venerated commentator that Mahaprabhu so much worshipped. So, Sridhar Swami says, briefly, he said this referring to Krishna's, remember, we are speaking here about Krishna's form that Brahma is seeing. And that form is medium size, but at the same time it's all pervasive. Again, it seems contradictory how something that is medium size can be unlimited. If it's medium size, it's not unlimited. But Krishna is defying that logic. And he has shown that, I mean, again, Brahma had just darshan of that principle some minutes ago. He thought this form is medium size, it's ordinary. And then Krishna said, look how ordinary I am. Limited Narayans, and then again, so-called medium-sized form. So Sridhar Swami says, this all-pervasive medium-sized form was also shown to me, Brahma is saying, through Sridhar Swami, in the same way, and not only to your mother. So basically with this, Brahma is bringing back his presentation to his own case. Now sometimes we try to make our own case, and we will refer to some reference from someone else, basically, to some other authority, in this case, Yashoda. And that's pretty powerful authority you can refer to. If you want to invoke some authority in Braj, you invoke Yashoda's name. But Brahma is saying now, okay, but now I will speak about my own experience. So Brahma first... In some verses before, this was a few verses ago, Brahma established, if you want to put it like that, the achintya-ness of Krishna's form, the inconceivable nature of Krishna's form, which seemed medium-sized, but which is unlimited at the same time. In the beginning of creation, he had some experience of that. He mentioned that in previous verses, even when he was in the lotus and looking for his source, going down the lotus stem, but not finding his source. More recently, then he went to Yashoda when he was looking into Krishna's mouth, and outside of Krishna's mouth, the universe was outside, the universe was inside, she was inside, Krishna was inside, but Krishna was outside. And here in this verse, Brahma is again returning to his own case, but now connected with the experience he had just a few minutes ago, where through this apparently small, medium-sized, little Krishna, unlimited Narayans are coming in every direction. So he's with this, he's trying to further pound this important theological post that the form of Krishna defies all material logic. It's achintya. Yan shyama sundaram achintya guna sarupam. This is what Brahma says in Brahma Samhita. Krishna has inconceivable nature, inconceivable qualities, inconceivable form. Everything about him is achintya. That's one of his names indeed. Achintya doesn't mean you cannot understand that in any form, but you can only understand that if you approach that in a certain way. And Brahma is realizing this. As we said some classes ago, Brahma is a big thinking person. He has four heads, so he thinks a lot. He has lots of thinking capacity, thinking in the four directions. So he's like the greatest intellectual of the universe, I mean, to be the architect of the whole multiverse, you have to be pretty smart. So he did that. But he realized, to understand the form of Krishna, I have to put my foreheads to the ground, at his feet. And in this way, I will understand much more than trying to figure out for myself what this form is about. And that's why he has said in verses before, Jnana prayasa modapa shyana mantaiva. Instead of trying to tread the ascending process, of trying to, by my own strength, understand the unlimited, I will put my head to the ground. I offer namaste, namaskar, and by that I will get so much more knowledge. And if I try to raise my head and try to figure out everything. As we know, at this point, Brahma Bimohan Lila means the four heads of Brahma are spinning like nothing. He's not being able to figure out what's going on. So, basically, that's what Sridhar Swami mentions. So, let's continue with Sanatana Goswami's commentary to this verse on his Brihad Vaishnav Toshani, his commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, as usual, some of our acharyas, they will present in between lines, no? Like Brahma will say one verse and Krishna will reply something in argument with that, no? Because remember, Krishna is fully into his Mukdata, in the words of Vishwanath Chakravartaka. Mukdata means, how to say in English? Like naivete, like this innocence, like Brahma is praying to him, you are the absolute, the source of everyone, and Krishna is like, what are you talking about? I'm looking for my friends and cows. Why you say I'm such a big guy? You are Brahma, you are a big guy. I'm nobody, I'm just an uncivilized village boy, medium size. I'm looking for my friends. You are telling me that I'm the source of everything? What are you talking about? So Krishna kind of, with this, is turning Brahma's heart, because Brahma wants to enter Vrindavan. He asked that to Krishna in the beginning of creation. He expressed, I'd like to have Sakya, I'd like to be your friend. So Krishna is saying, okay, I'll prepare the ground for that to happen eventually. So with this in between lines, Krishna is also churning Brahma's heart more and more. So Krishna might reply, Sanatana Goswami suggests here to Brahma, if everything in this world is illusory, then I too am illusory. So let's see what Brahma says now. Like Krishna is in this way like creating some udipana, some stimulus for Brahma to go further into his, you know, like with sometimes guru and disciple, you know, guru may ask something to the disciple and the disciple will give the reply and the guru would present some argument to that. All the disciple is correct in what he's saying. The guru is, but no, because this and this. And the disciple is like, no, but this. The guru, no, but this could be. So in this way, he's further churning the level of realization. So Brahma replies to this possibility that Krishna may say, well, you are saying that everything in this world is illusory. And Krishna says, and I'm here in this world, so probably I'm also illusory. I'm part of this Maya Shakti show. So I don't think I'm supernatural like you are proposing. Krishna is saying like this. Brahma says, no. In this verse, he's replying, no. Although you are included in the world, not because avatar, he's descending into the world, today I directly realized that you and those who belong to you are real. In other words, not a product of illusion. So, again, with this, Krishna is also like testing how much Brahma understood the lesson, because some minutes ago, Brahma was thinking that. Some minutes ago, Brahma was thinking, when he saw Krishna and his friends having the picnic, so what's this? And this seems like an ordinary group of boys just having fun. The devas are celebrating like he's God. He doesn't seem to be God. I mean, they're just eating with the left hand and having fun for a while. They must be imposters or something. So Brahma himself was thinking, this is Maya. So now Krishna is saying, so I'm here in this world, I'm an ordinary boy, I'm Maya. But Brahma now had conversion. You know, he had been converted in the last minutes. Try to imagine how intense this is. Let's 5-10 minutes ago, Brahma was thinking, Krishna and his friends are a product of Maya, and this guy is an imposter. And after 5 minutes, he realized, he's the source of Narayan. So from thinking he's an imposter to understand he's the source of God, even. Unlimited Narayans are coming from him. Wow. So Brahma is saying that here. You are in the world, you are in front of me, you have descended here, but I saw it. You and those who belong to you, implying the ones who I've tried to kidnap, your friends, your cops, your eternal associates, you are not under the jurisdiction of the illusory energy. You are under another department. You operate under another codes, another laws. So Brahma further replies according to Sanatan Goswami here, in a rhetorical way, as we mentioned. Was the fact that the universe is Maya without you not fully shown to me by you on this very day? Indeed, it was shown. In other words, without you, whatever you and you means you and your associates, because without your associate, you are not you. So he's understanding. Separate from that, everything else in this world is Maya. But you and your associate, although you seem to be part of this world, although you seem to be ordinary people, I actually were thinking that 5 minutes ago. Now I'm understanding you are totally in another reality altogether. So today I've realized that, Brahma is saying. So he makes this important point also. He's realizing not only Krishna is transcendental, but your associates as well. So he's realizing the principle of Swarup Shakti, personified, the personifications of Krishna's internal potency, the gopas, the gopis, and the calves, and so on. So, and remember, these calves and friends were Krishna, because were expansions of Krishna, the ones that Brahma saw some minutes ago. Also, that's another point. So everything that you became was unlimited, Brahma is realizing. At the beginning, I thought, you are ordinary, your friends are ordinary, your calves are ordinary. And after a few minutes, he saw Narayans coming from every calf and every friend. So you thought this is ordinary? See. One God per calf, one God per gopa, and one Brahma worshipping that God in each one of them. And Brahma seeing himself worshipping Narayan. And so basically he's making this point. Although these calves and friends who were Krishna's expansion seem so differentiated, I understand that all of them were you. Now remember, these are the expansions of Krishna. These are not the actual calves and boys who are Krishna's associates, but are Krishna's expansions that were there for a whole year. So actually they were of great variety. They were actually one. That's why he uses the word Advayam, which means non-dual. Everything was ultimately you. At Brahma Advayam Shishyati. What remains is the, how is it in English? Indivisible Brahman, non-dual. So he's referring to Krishna as Brahman here. Of course, when saying Brahman, it's not that Brahma is promoting Advaita Vedanta or radical non-duality as Shankaracharya will do. Basically, he's referring to Krishna as Brahman because it's a name of Brahman means the absolute is a way of referring, not necessarily to the undifferentiated effulgence of Bhagavan, but just as the absolute. Brahman also means great, all pervasive, and that's what Brahma just saw a few minutes ago. And even in the previous chapter, chapter 13, Sukadeva Goswami refers back to Krishna as Brahman, interestingly. When Sukadeva Goswami in the previous chapter was describing what Brahma was seeing, and Krishna expanding and expanding, and then Krishna wrapping up all that manifestation and remaining himself, looking for his friends and calves. Then Sukadeva Goswami refers to Krishna as Brahman in that verse of the Bhagavatam, 13 chapters, verse 61. And he uses exactly the two same words, Brahma Dvayam. Advayam means non-dual, and Brahma means the great, the absolute. Referring to, even though he appeared as multifaceted friends and calves, expansions, all of them wrap up and became and remain in that one non-dual substance entity called Krishna. And Brahma himself will make this clear at the end of the Brahma Stuti. In one famous prayer, Ahobhagyam Ahobhagyam Nandagopa Brajokasham Yan Mitram Paramanandam Purna Brahman Sanatanam. So he will refer to Krishna as Purna Brahma. You are not only Brahma, but the full Brahma, the fullness of Brahman, the fullness of the Absolute. So again, Brahman means all pervasive. And that's the experience of Brahma. Try to keep in mind the two words, please. Brahman and Brahma. So Brahma, some minutes ago, he saw Krishna's all-pervasiveness. Appearing from one, this little medium-sized form, unlimited Narayans, and returning to him. And he remains localized there. So that's why Brahman is used here. Just not to be confused, because sometimes we may be accustomed. Every time Brahman is used, refers to the impersonal aspect of the Absolute. Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Let's continue with Jiva Goswami's commentary. There will be a mixture of what he's saying in the Lagu Vaishnava Toshini, his commentary on the Bhagavatam, and in the Bhagavat Sandarbha, Anucheda 36. So he paraphrases Brahma, saying, let us forget Yashoda's realization, let us speak of today. No. Again, because for two verses they were speaking about what Yashoda saw, and Brahmana said, okay, let's go back to the facts. 5 minutes ago, what happened here to me directly. So with that idea in mind, is that Brahma is speaking. He's bringing back the case to whatever he experienced. So Brahma is saying, according to Jiva Goswami, some repetition is here in what other commentators say, but it's important to repeat. Again, comes the rhetorical question. Did you not show me today that everything in this universe, excluding yourself, everything outside of you is of the nature of Maya, meaning that it is perceived only through the potency of Maya? Of course you did. In other words, due to Maya, the universe appears to bewildered people as existing only outside of you, as you appear in this human form. In other words, Brahma had the realization, actually the universe is not outside of Krishna, but everything is inside of him. Although he appears inside the universe, which again, then we enter into this divine paradox, Brahma realized everything is inside of Krishna, but Krishna is inside the universe. But the universe is inside of Krishna. and to perceive that separately, the universe and Krishna as something different, that's through the effect of Maya, basically. And Krishna will ask to Brahma, after saying this, according to Jiva Goswami, Krishna asked Brahma, again, in Brajabhab, how did I show you all this when I am in the human form? Because you, Brahma, are saying like all universes are inside of me, but I'm a human, I'm a boy. How did I show all this stuff to you? So Brahma answers in this verse. No? At first, and he starts to enumerate. At first, in Brahma Bimohan Lila, you were one. You were yourself looking for your friends and calves. Then the various forms of cowherd friends and calves appear from this one form. Then again, they disappear into that very same form, which is all that remains. This means that this form is Advai Brahma, or the non-dual absolute reality. So again, a multifaceted variety came, but again merged into that only person, implying there is no duality in you. So if Krishna is Advai Brahma, or Advai Gyan, non-dual consciousness, non-dual reality, it means he can only be understood by non-dual people, if you will, to put it in brief words. We have to enter non-dual thinking for perceiving the non-dual absolute. You cannot just access non-dualism through dualism. And of course, dualism is the norm in this world, generally. To be under the influence of Maya Shakti means dualistic thinking, dualistic mind. Us and them. Black and white, good and bad, I like, I dislike. All this type of, like, amputated things, no? Like we are not seeing everything with a common center, but this here and this there, and we are not able yet to to conceptualize reality in harmony with the common center. And as we were speaking the other day, I think about that, right? Like non-dualistic thinking, and for us chanting the mantra basically means that. Many times we hear the word mantra means that which helps to liberate the mind. So what's the implications of liberating the mind? The idea is generally the mind exists mostly in dualistic perception. So you have to free the mind, means free the mind from that dualistic perception and enter into the realm of non-dualism. And I will say that most of us may have had some glimpse of what happens when you are able to access non-dual perception. You get a glimpse of non-dual reality, because that non-dual reality is eternally existent and present there. The fact that we do not experience that is just because we are remaining in a dualistic mindset. So chanting the mantra has to do with getting rid of this dual thinking, getting rid of thoughts, which is not so easy. We are so attached to thinking about everything, thinking about thinking, or thinking about, if you are chanting, you are thinking about chanting, or thinking about not thinking about chanting, but still you're thinking. and somehow you pull yourself down to the dualistic mindset. Yet, no? And that's why sometimes many of our acharyas will say, when you are chanting, and sometimes someone asks one Srila Prabhupada, so what I should think when I'm chanting? He'll say, give your mind a rest for a moment. Stop thinking. And we are like, how to do that? Is that possible? And it's a non-stop machine. Try to hear the sound of the mantra. Try to hear the mantra. No need to think. No need to filter the experience through the... No? Although for us it will be like, oh, that will be higher if I think about what I'm... No. I will take the situation lower. Try to just let the mantra speak for itself, if you will, and hear that narrative, that revelation. And of course, it sounds easy. When you try, you will see that thinking. So many thoughts I have to. So then comes the whole sadhana, the whole work, the whole battle, if you will, the whole Kurukshetra. And again, that's another. It's connected, but the point is we are speaking here about Advai, so non-duality. Of course, it's easier said than done, but it's important to understand that how we have to access, how we can access non-duality. So the point is that Brahma here, going back to Brahma's epiphany, revelation, Brahma witnessed the appearance, the existence and the disappearance of unlimited spiritual and material substances coming all from Krishna and then retiring all in Krishna in that single form. So that meets the criterion of non-dual Brahman. The absolute is non-dual. All variety comes from him, sustains, returns to him. It's not disconnected from that source. So those are the characteristics of Brahman. Brahman means all-pervasive. And again, Krishna's all-pervasive, although you see a picture, doesn't seem all-pervasive, because, how can you do a picture that is all-pervasive? You have to frame it. All-pervasive means no frame is enough. I cannot never, end the picture. So it seems non-pervasive, but it's all-pervasive. In this connection, in his Brihat Krama Sandarbha, which is yet another commentary on the Bhagavatam that Jiva Goswami wrote. He wrote three commentaries on the Bhagavatam. With one, he was not enough. once I remember Srila Prabhupada, my Guru's quotes, he wrote a commentary on the Gita, and one devotee asked him, so which is your next book you plan to publish or to comment on? He said, I think I may write a commentary on the Gita. And the devotees were like, but you already wrote a commentary on the Gita. And Prabhupada kind of chuckled. And there's no end to how many commentaries you can write. And there's no limit. And Jiva Goswami makes the proof. He wrote three commentaries on the Bhagavatam. And he could. And every other book he wrote was also like a commentary on the Bhagavatam, Sandarbha, Gopal Champu, but he had officially other commentaries on the Bhagavatam. We had Krama Sandarbha, Lagu Vaishnav Toshane, so like showing, no, there's no end to this. Pivata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. You can drink this juice forever. So he says, Srila Jiva Goswami says that this verse is mentioned, today's verse, following the logic of Nahi Satyasya Nanatvam. This is one verse from the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, which means the ultimate reality is not manifold. So this is one of the two sides of the coin of Achintya Bheda Bhed. Our metaphysics is the reality simultaneously one and different. It's non-dual, absolute, but it has different shaktis, different energies, and those energies create variety. But that variety is tied to that unique common source. So there's unity in diversity. So we should be concerned about establishing both things. Not only there is diversity, but also there is unity. As we say always, if there is only unity and there's no variety, it's boring. No, everything is the same, everything thinks the same, feels the same. You start to become nervous. I imagine if we are here and I feel we agree on everything, we think all the same, say the same, feel the same, it's like you start to go crazy. Please, a little bit of variety here. Bring some conflict here. It's too boring. But of course, if we do not agree on anything and it's only diversity, only variety, that's too much also. We need some unity. So we need unity and we need diversity. So in this particular case, the abed, the non-difference, the non-dual, the unity side of the equation is emphasized. And of course, in the Bhagavatam, this is very much emphasized. Badanti tattatva vidas. Tattvam jnananadvayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdyate. Famous verse of the Bhagavatam. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates a lot on it. And this verse basically says, reality is not non-dual. It's a non-dual. It's non-dual consciousness, basically. He says, advay jnan tattva. Reality is non-dual consciousness. But it's known as Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan according to the level of approach. So the idea is reality is non-dual. There is variety, but at the same time there is Krishna can become many, as he just did in front of Brahma, but remain one at the same time. That's why he's Advaita Brahma, it's non-dual substance. And Brahma is, I mean, he's pretty much an authority, whereas Brahma is considered as highest authority in Veda, in Vedanta. Sometimes he's called Veda Garbha, Brahma, which means like the womb of the Vedas, from whom the Vedas are coming, or he who contains the Vedic knowledge in his own inner being. So the point, if he reached this conclusion, he has seen that, that's a fact. He personally witnessed all the attributes of Brahman in the body of Krishna, basically. Brahman is all-pervasive, it's unlimited, no beginning, no end. He saw that in Krishna's body, which seems limited, which seems small, which seems ordinary, which seems village-like, but actually it's Brahman. But in engaging in Leela, that's how we conceive. Krishna is Brahman, he's part of Brahman, as we will see. But he doesn't look like Brahman. He looks like a little boy. So it's important for us to establish this foundation. Yeah, he looks like a little boy, but actually he's the highest form of the non-dual absolute. So Brahma is laying that foundation over and over again with these verses. So nobody misunderstands, misreads Krishna Leela, because it's easily misunderstandable. Well, you can really go jump into Krishna Leela and think, I can do that. I can go to the countryside and do all that stuff that he's doing there with my village people, with my neighbors. And so you need to understand what's actually taking place there. So again, Krishna is Brahman, and Brahman is all-pervading. Therefore, Krishna is all-pervading. in his personal form. Again, he has a form, but that form is not limited. Although our experience is that forms are limited. Our forms are limited. I cannot extend my form. My form is not unlimited. The presence of my Atma is limited to this form. I'm not present in your body and in your body. But again, that's our form. A limited one. But the form of Bhagavan is totally another reality altogether. Vedanta Sutra confirms this as well, which says, like the form of the Lord, although it's separated by space, does not undergo any change whatsoever, because he simultaneously exists everywhere. So Krishna appears localized. Brahma's having this experience. Okay, you are in front of me, but a few minutes ago, I saw all the universes coming from you. So if all the universes are coming from you, it means this universe is coming from you. So although you seem to be in the universe, 1 minute ago I saw the universe in you, and not only this one, but all of the other ones as well. And I saw myself inside of you. And again, we have to think about that as much as we can, as we say the other day, until our head starts to pour smoke here and it's showing collapse. No, stop thinking, please. You have reached the limit of this function. We have to reach this place in some different way. Let's go back to some words of Jiva Goswami in his Lago Vaishnav Toshani before reaching the end today, with some expressions of the verse, so we can justify also the nice writing here in the whiteboard. So you have one expression here, which is Tvadrite, in the very beginning, the second and third word, Tvadrite, which means other than you. So in this verse, Jiva Goswami says, the expression Tvadrite, or other than you, means that everything except for Bhagavan is Maya. In this world, basically. What we perceive, another way of saying that is, if when you look at this world, somehow you do not perceive Bhagavan, you are in Maya. What makes you see the world and not see Bhagavan is the influence of Maya. And the influence of Maya is, we call it, the result of that influence is illusion. So you are seeing something as it is not. Srila Prabhupada had Bhagavad Gita as it is. And we have the world as it is not. Which means I look at the world, but I do not see Krishna. I do not see the source. I do not see the master, the background, the all-pervasive aspect of divinity, if you will. So that's Maya. To not see Krishna, basically, means Maya is doing, her influence is on us, basically. And generally, when we say that, means we are not seeing Krishna, we are not seeing the center, but we are seeing ourselves at the center, interestingly. I mean, sadly. Because generally someone is the center. So if Krishna is misplaced, according to our vision, of course he's never misplaced. No. If we think he's misplaced, we are out of place ourselves. And we think we are the center, that means you are out of place. Center is not your place. No matter how much you think you are the center, you are not the center, you cannot. So that means Maya, like to believe the impossible and to insist on that. To have hope after trying unlimited lifetimes, unlimited times in this lifetime, it's not working for you, and it's not working for any other person in the history of humanity till today, but somehow still there is some lack of hope that next time it will work. And we continue endeavoring in that direction. This time will work. Not only you, but so many other people think in that same way. So technically speaking, that's a good definition of madness, but no. Anyhow, we call it Maya. Do not be so in your face. Tvadrite. And Jiva Goswami, they say the word Tvad, which means you, in this phrase, other than you, also implies other than you, also includes here the cows, the cowherd boys, and Vrindavan, which are parts of Krishna's internal energy. So here he is referring, Brahma is referring, or Jiva Goswami, not to the expansions of Krishna as the cowherd boys and the calves, but as the cowherd boys and the calves that Brahma tried to kidnap. He's saying, they are not part of, I mean, other than you, this is Maya, but other than you, your friends, your calves, your Vrindavan, all those things enter into the category of you. No, like, again, as we said, if I take out Vrindavan, how much Krishna is you, Krishna? No? That's what the gopis will say to Krishna in Kurukshetra. No? When Krishna is in Kurukshetra, I say, well, we can reunite again. And the gopis say, well, where is Vrindavan? Where are the cows? Where are you? That's the point. You are not, if Vrindavan is not here, you are not here. Because you without Vrindavan is not you. You are Braja Krishna. You are not Dwarkesh Krishna, Maturesh Krishna, Kurukshetra Krishna. That's another Krishna. We are interested in you. And you cannot exist without Vrindavan, gopis, gopas, with the whole playground, with the whole paraphernalia. So this is an important point that Brahma is realizing, the importance of the associates of Bhagavan, the Swarup Shakti, and how Bhagavan is one with that, how much his identity is tied with the love that he's, basically how the form of Krishna is a result of the love he's receiving from his devotees, and he adopts a particular form according to the love he's receiving, basically, which is a very unique, interesting idea. So this was Brahma's unique experience. All these are insights that are coming in Brahma's heart at this precise moment, one verse after the other. No? There is a special oneness between Krishna and his Swarup Shakti. Of course, Maya Shakti is also one energy of Krishna, but somehow Krishna is never entering in direct contact with Maya Shakti. But with Swarup Shakti, oh, he's entering into so much direct contact, basically. And apart from those things that exist, apart from Krishna and the Swarup Shakti, we have the word Asya. Here that comes with the abbreviation, Sya. So Asya means of this world, basically referring to, apart from you, Braja, cows and calves, your retinue, Swarup Shakti, Asya, this world, Maya Shakti. So Jiva Goswami quotes many verses from the Bhagavatam. When he's referring, for example, when when Krishna expanded as the boys and the calves, and this at the same time showed the Chaturbhuj, the four-armed Vishnu forms, and they were worshipped, these forms, by Brahma, time elements, the Devas. He's saying, all that people, Asya, they are part of the material world, the time element, the Devas, Brahma, myself. So Brahma is having this clear definition. On one side you have these personalities under the influence of Maya Shakti, Brahma, Devas, and so on, the universe, material elements. And on another side you have Vrindavan, your associates, which seem to be part of the material universe, which seem to be, to the untrained eye, seem to be ordinary fellows, but which belong to a different category altogether. And then Brahma says, Sakam Maya. I don't know where you can find that in the verse. Here. So Sakam Maya, which means, again, Brahma is referring to his vision. Sakam Maya means including myself. So the point is that when Brahma saw these unlimited Narayan forms coming from one Krishna that were worshipped by different elements, Brahma himself was worshipping. So he says, Sakam Maya. I was seeing this vision in which so many personalities were worshipping all these forms, and me myself was included in that vision worshipping those forms. So, and many universes were there. So the point is that Bhagavan was worshipping the same universe that where Brahma was living. In other words, the universe in which Brahma is existing exists also inside of Krishna, because that appeared from him, basically. In other words, Brahma is implying, everything is pervaded by you. No? Your body is present everywhere. Everything is coming from that. Nothing exists outside of you. I do not exist outside of you. And again, the the practical implication of that, as we said before, is that Brahma implies nothing exists outside of you. So in one way, everything is inside your womb. You are like a mother, everything is inside the womb, and I'm like a child inside your womb. And as we say before, in almost every verse, Brahma is invoking this idea, a child will be in the womb of the mother. Sometimes the baby will be kicking the womb of the mother. But the mother won't take offense. The mother will be happy, like, oh, my baby is alive. Well, that will, she will be happy to, okay, this is symptoms of everything is going on well. So Brahma is saying the same way, I'm inside your womb. And some minutes ago, I did a little bit mischief. I tried to kidnap your friends and it was like some kicking inside your womb. So you are like my mother, because Krishna is Brahma's mother and father. Brahma didn't have normal labor experience. No. So you are like my mother, and I did some kicking in your womb. You won't, don't take offense, please. Forgive me for whatever offense I've done, basically. And basically, he ends up describing again what he saw. All this sequence of events. Krishna was by himself, then he expanded the friends and the calves, then the Narayan forms, all of this wrapped up, and Krishna alone remained like the undivisible Brahman. So Brahma is realizing all these different levels of display that I've just seen some minutes ago, all of them are you alone. There's non-duality in all that I saw. I saw so much diversity, but all the diversity has at its root non-duality. You are Brahman, the non-dual, perfect Brahman. No? Indeed, Brahma comes to this insight. This surpasses mere Brahman. No? Because you're going to speak of Brahman, but you are Brahman in a very special way. But generally, Brahman is non-dual, but all-pervasive, that's all. But you have exhibited such an incredible, gave me such an incredible darshan. So you're... your Brahmanness, if you will, is unique. No? Brahma Dvayam Shishyati. So Brahma Dvayam Shishyati means only this non-dual Brahman remain at the end. So the famous Brahman that the Shastra is describing, on some level can be compared, but actually cannot be compared to the Brahman that is standing in front of me, Brahma is saying. He's speaking to Krishna. You are that same Brahman that Shastra is speaking about, but you are not that same Brahman. You are Brahman 2.0, as they say. No, upgraded version of it. Para Brahman. He will say that, as we mentioned in a few verses. Aho bhagyam, maho bhagyam, nanda gopa prayokasham. Yan mitram paramanandam, purna brahma sanatan. You are purna brahma. Yeah, we know Brahma, but you are purna brahma. You are the absolute, in its fullest expression. Executing Leela, interacting lovingly with your Swarup Shakti, and so on. Let's conclude our explanation of this verse by referring to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, Sararta Darshini, which is always very, very interesting, and then we will conclude here. So I'll read, he says, it's kind of a summary of everything we have seen today, so it's also good to make some overall wrapping up. So he says, Brahma continued. He paraphrases Brahma. The universe you displayed within your belly and the universe displayed outside that you showed to your mother, going to the Yashoda's example, and all the unlimited universes passing in and out of the pores of your Mahavishnu form are produced by your material energy and therefore are designated as Maika. This I have already understood. But today I have realized the existence of thousands upon thousands of spiritual universes, not only the material ones, but spiritual ones, formed through your inconceivably powerful Swarup Shakti. There's not one object that exists independent of you in the thousands of universes that you have shown today, for everything is emanating from you. O Krishna, today you have shown me that both you yourself and everything within this creation are manifestations of your inconceivable potency, Achintya Shakti. First you appeared alone, and then by your Swarup Shakti, you expanded as all the cowherd boys and calves of Raj. Next, by Yoga Maya, you covered all the cowherd boys and calves and revealed countless four-handed Vishnu forms composed of your Swarup Shakti. All these Vishnu Murtis were being worshipped by all conscious entities, from the blades of grass to all the Brahmas. After that, you appeared as an equal number of complete universes. Then, by your desire, Yogamaya covered all this and revealed the one form of the pure, perfect Brahman with immeasurable, incomparable beauty. Which, of course, is Krishna. Oh, you never hear that Brahma is beautiful. Brahman is beautiful. Because Brahman generally is nirgun, has no qualities. But Krishna is the beautiful Brahman. And Brahma concludes through Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Now, because of my good fortune, Yogamaya does not cover this from my eyes. Brahma Shishyate, which means only you remain. Your form as the ultimate expression of Brahman remains and is not further transformed into something else. So Brahma is concluded like this. First you appear like this, then you expand like this, you show that. And finally, this unique, charming, beautiful form remains. Unfortunately, Yogamaya is not taking this vision out and creating something else, but only you remain as the most charming form on the knob of non-dual absolute in the form of Sri Krishna. So again, this is a very important section of the Bhagavatam, which somehow shows how Krishna is the source of everything, both materially speaking, spiritually speaking. So Krishna himself is saying that in the Gita, the first of the four chatur shloki, four verses that summarize the whole book. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matha sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samambita. Krishna says, aham sarvasya prabhavo. He says, everything comes from me. So it's not an exaggeration. I mean, if we as Gaudiyas play out the implications of that line, means everything comes from me. If Krishna says that, means that even Narayan comes from Krishna. The full expression of that line of the Gita is playing out here in the Brahma Vimohan Lila, because Krishna, the Gita says, everything comes from me. And we may think in a more general way, yes, but in the Brahma Vimohan Lila, unlimited Narayans are coming from Krishna. So to that point, this line applies. Everything comes from me, including God. God comes from Krishna. Krishna is not God. Krishna is something more than God. Narayan is God. Vishnu is God. Krishna is Krishna. Krishna is God beyond God. Of course, he's God. But at the same time, he's more than that. That's a unique Gaudiya psychology. Like Srila Prabhupada will say, people generally teach us that God is the most worshipable object, but we teach who is the most worshipable object of God. So there's something above God. And of course, Krishna is that something. It's God when he's in love with his devotees, and that's the highest thing for him, and so on. So anyhow, some words I want to share today. In the next verse tomorrow, number 19, till verse 22, we are in a certain sections of these prayers. But Brahma will continue analyzing this like sacred wonder of Krishna's medium size, all-pervasive, charming form of this non-dual Brahman in his most captivating presentation. I don't know if anyone has any questions, something you may like to ask about, to share.
Guru Vakya. As you mentioned, that Brahma thought that on the one hand he went too far, right, with this whole arrangement. On the other hand, you mentioned the word mischief, so Doesn't it look a little bit that Brahma somehow qualified himself for Sakyarati, you know, with his mischievous mind? But, you know, he acted as if he was a kind of cowherd boy, but not yet a cowherd boy, but this kind of character, and he's normally sober person and so on, but he did something a bit crazy, yes?
in one part of the commentary, I think I don't remember exactly to which verse, but one verse of this section. I don't remember which commentator, but they were paraphrasing Brahma, that Brahma will say, in the beginning of creation, he will say to Krishna, when I was in the lotus trying to look for you, you didn't appear, and then you appeared, because Krishna revealed, and then you disappeared, and I tried to for you to appear, but you didn't appear. So it seemed like you were playing hide and seek with me. No? And then, which is very much in connection with Sakya Rasa, which is what Brahma wants to attain. So maybe he started to get some Sakya samskars, like that hide and seek in the beginning of creation. And then he goes to Vrindavan, as we know, and he sees all this Sakya Rasa environment, which somehow includes hide and seek of another type. And Brahma tried himself to do some hide and seek, but it didn't work for sure. So he realized, I like to do that, but still it seems I don't have the adhikar to engage in that language, but I would like to. So yeah, somehow we can connect this this mischief to part of his aspiration, if you will, which is not yet fully accomplished, expressed in a fully accomplished way, but he has tried his best, and he's getting more and more upgraded in that connection. Yeah. Oh yeah. What else? Any other question? We have time for both, no problem.
If our form is limited, our physical form now, and the form of Bhagavan is unlimited, then how about the Siddha Deha? Mm-hmm. If it is under the influence of Swarup Shakti, under the shelter, or part of Swarup Shakti, the Nityasilas, what is the... their position.
You have to read that book. Inherent or Inherited? Have you heard about that one?
Yes.
I even heard that you are reading it.
Yeah.
which chapter?
Sixth?
Yeah. Have to go back a few chapters then.
Yes, for sure.
I'll read more attentively. Chapter 4.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, basically the idea is that Siddha Deha, or the spiritual form we will... receive is composed of Swarup Shakti. That's the very definition of sadhana bhakti by Srila Rupa Goswami. Kriti sadhya bhavet sadhya bhavasya sadhana vidha nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatyam hridi sadhyata. Which means sadhana bhakti is not producing bhava or prem, but is cleaning the chitta, cleaning the mind, if you will, to prepare it for the descent of Swarup Shakti in the form eventually of bhava, which bhava means also bhava deha or siddha deha. When we say siddha deha means perfected body, but perfected body means a body made of bhava, body made of spiritual emotion, body made of Swarup Shakti. And of course those bodies, it's not that there are different ways that sometimes devotees understand this, and I've heard devotees speaking about that, like, and Jiva Goswami says something in the Priti Sandarbha that can be interpreted in different ways. So I'm just sharing my reading of that. But it's not, at least I will say, it's not that you have like these bodies like in a closet, no? In Golok, and all of these bodies are already hanging there, just like waiting. Yeah. Not like, okay, like lying there and have assigned names. Okay, and this is for Radha Giridhari, and this is Guru Bhakya. Okay, it's the moment that the body is found. So you're like, okay, now I have it. Something like But actually, we will say, of course, at the same time, it's not something that is created out of nothing. It's not that they were not existing and they start to exist, because in our philosophy, we do not follow this notion that in Latin is called creatio ex nihilo, which means in Christianity they follow it like, creation out of nothing. No, there was nothing, and the first day whatever, water and earth was created and the human was created. So our idea is everything exists forever. But also, everything has potential. Because we could say, I mean, that's a long, complex topic, but it's an interesting one. Sometimes we all read things like, there's no change in the absolute. Krishna doesn't undergo changes. There's no change in the spiritual world. But the point is, what's the meaning of that? Which type of change? Because at the same time, there is change. We hear constantly that every single day Krishna's beauty is increasing and the love of his devotees is increasing and his beauty is increasing in reply to that and their love is increasing. So there is change. There are new leelas every day. It's not that every day everything is the same because there is no change. Like every day they do the same, they speak the same. I mean, it's pretty boring. I don't want to go there. So they are change, but not change in the sense that we experience them here. Not like birth, old age, not like all these type of changes that by effect, by the influence of time. So when we hear there's no change in spirit, in consciousness, this refers to that, those type of change. But there are new leelas, new dynamics, basically. So the point is that the Siddha Deha is, in one sense, it's not created out of nothing, but it's part of the potential of the Swarup Shakti. And Swarup Shakti is there, but also every Shakti has a potential, as we have potential as Tathasta Shakti to accomplish something that is not in the here and now, but it's in potentiality is there. What to speak of, if that happens with the Tathasta Shakti, what to speak of the Swarup Shakti? So there is potentiality and new waves, if you will, of Swarup Shakti will manifest with new leelas and with a new dynamic. So in that sense, when we are ready to become imbibed by the influence of Swarup Shakti, the corresponding Siddha Deha will manifest. I'm putting that somehow poetically, but it's the reach of words, the limit of words. A new wave of Swarup Shakti will manifest in its own potential. That corresponding spiritual body will manifest out of Swarup Shakti. So in that sense, yeah, those bodies have very unique potentialities and possibilities, very different to the limitations of our present body. I know it's difficult to conceive, because we cannot avoid thinking about that, and you start to think about your present body, and it's not working. Your present body is getting old, gray hair, as you can see, and so many other stuff like that. And when you speak about Siddha Deha, it's nothing to do like that. It's some point of reference. No? But, yeah. Like Srila Prabhupada will say, no, if when our head collapses in trying to understand the things, he will say, why don't you go there and find it for yourself? There all the doubts will be resolved. When you are there and you actually have the realization of what's taking place, everything fits in place. Words and thoughts have their limitations. We try to use them as much as we can, but understanding their limits as well. Tarun, you have one question?
Yeah. Thank you for the beautiful class. I was wondering something. Maybe you discussed it in the previous classes, but I'm not sure. I don't remember.
No problem.
So, it's interesting how Brahma, he's the fourth living being, and actually his intelligence is absolutely like pure, and he learned all the Vedas with his four heads.
Mm-hmm.
And Krishna said he's the Vedanta Krit Vedavid.
Ibacham.
Yeah, he's also the conclusion of the Vedas.
Ah.
So if he understands the Vedas, he should know the conclusion of the Vedas.
Mm.
This is like one part.
Mm.
And the other part is like part of the Vedic knowledge is understanding the descents of the different avatars. How, like, in the manner of Bhagavatam, how Bhagavatam is explaining that in different yugas, okay, maybe we're in Kali Yuga, Kalki Avatar hasn't come yet, but we know Kalki Avatar will come. He has a specific features, his features are like this, mm-hmm. his form is white, and his, mm-hmm. he will be on, you know, horse, and how Brahma doesn't know, like, the ascent of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bit interesting.
Yeah, I get the point. Yeah, what we could say is that, going to the first part of your question, interesting one, that, yeah, Brahma is known for having studied Vedas not only once, but not only twice, not only thrice, but one with each head, if you will, no, four times. So that's pretty comprehensive study. And despite that, somehow it seems that on one side, he's known as having studied the Vedas comprehensively, and at the same time as you quoted Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Krishna is saying, "Vedanta krit veda vidhi bhajaham." Krishna says, "I am to be known as the conclusion of the Vedic study." So it seems that Brahma didn't did his homework properly, or what happened there? No. So of course, different things can be said. I will say that the main point here is that, of course, Brahma met Krishna before this Leela in particular, which is the one who really bewildered him. He met Krishna in the beginning of creation, as we know, being the first created being, if you will, in the cycle. So he met Krishna, but Krishna, we explained that, yeah, almost in the first class. Krishna there appear in the different disposition to him. So he appeared in a more, let's say, formal way, like his guru, exhibiting Gyan Mudra, no? Which is pretty much like Aishwarya-like mood of delivering knowledge and enlightening guru, disciple. So there was kind of a more... I mean, Krishna appeared as in Gopa Vesh, dressed as a Gopa, interestingly. He didn't appear like four hands or anything. But at the same time, there was some formality in his exchange with Brahma. Although on some level also, they shook hands. And Brahma expressed, "Oh, I have some attraction for Sakya, for being a friend of yours." But on some level, mostly that was predominated by some formality, as generally it happens between guru and disciple. It's not that they... disciple will go to the guru, "Hey, how are you doing, my friend?" No, it's like there is some decorum there. So Brahma kind of had that picture of Krishna, and of course he connected this, okay, study of the Vedas, Krishna, conclusion of the Vedas, and he connected, okay, yeah, Krishna is the conclusion of the Vedas, but there are different Krishnas, as we were saying before. So the Vedas, speaking in the Vedas, not speaking necessarily about the Bhagavatam, but the Vedas in itself, they do not speak that much about Krishna. The conclusion of the Vedas, as we know, is the Vedanta, and the natural, more comprehensive explanation of Vedanta is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then you find who Krishna is and what Krishna Prem is. So the idea is that Brahma mostly studied the four Vedas, where there's only a hint towards that reality. No? Because the Vedas, as Krishna says in the Gita to Arjuna, Trigunya Visaya Veda Nistra Trigunya Vavarjuna. No, he's saying, the Vedas mostly deal with the three gunas. No? Mostly deal with Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, some Upashana Kanda, but mostly are connected with Dharma, Artha, Kama. Some little... moksha. But Krishna in Vrindavan, Braja Leela, that goes way beyond even moksha. It's a post-liberated situation, which doesn't seem too much moksha-like. Again, it seems like me and my family in our holidays in the countryside. If you see me externally, it doesn't seem like moksha, liberated people, yogis, four arms, something overtly extraordinary. So again, Brahma had this idea, no? And Brahma is Vidhi, no? Brahma is known as the perfect follower of every single Vedic rule. He's very much in that identified with with this karma kanda section and doing everything, every ritual in a paka very perfectly. No, the scripture is saying if you want to be born as Brahma, because one can attain that post, you have to execute varnashram perfectly without any single mistake for 100 lifetimes. So try to, I mean, generally, if you start to understand, we do not practice that nowadays because varnashram is not part of nowadays society. But if you will just, okay, let's try to travel in time and try to apply this for 1 hour, you will break all the rules in record time. So what to speak 100 lifetimes without one single mistake, you can be Brahma. So that speaks how much Brahma is like a very correct personality. But who is mostly familiarized with that side of the Veda, which is mostly the main part of the Veda. So yeah, he has a glimpse of Krishna, he meets him in the beginning of creation, but still he has this more formal Aishwaryak side of Krishna. And he has this main structure of the rules and how to do everything properly. And Vedas are mostly about dharma, artha, kama. And when he goes to Vrindavan, all rules are broken there, basically. As we said, Brahma is finding Krishna with his friends sitting on the floor, eating with the hand, with the left hand, not the right hand, taking something, tasting things. So, wow, this is so good. You try. I'm putting on the mouth. And the friends putting that on the mouth of Krishna. No? For Brahma, this was like too much. I mean, his psychology collapsed because he's a follower of rules. And here, everyone was breaking all rules. Because love makes its own rules, and that's love prevails in Braj. So my point is, that was made Brahma to really not understand what was taking place. And that's the point that it's made here, is that Krishna Lila, in one sense, is beyond the reach of the Vedas. I mean, although I know that Prabhupada many times spoke about Vedic tradition, but technically speaking, he said that many times, our proposal is beyond the reach of the Vedas. Krishna says that in the Gita again. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtray Gunya Babarjuna. He's telling to Arjuna, the Vedas mostly deal with the gunas, transcend the Vedas. That means Vedanta. Reach the end of the Veda. And then comes the Bhagavatam. Shrotam api upanishadam dure harikatamrita, says Mahaprabhu. The most esoteric and metaphysical section of the Vedas are the Upanishads. Mahaprabhu says, that place to where the Upanishads can take you, which in comparison to Dharma, Artha, Kama is a lot, Mahaprabhu says, where the Upanishads can take you is still very far from when Harikatha can take you. Upanishad can take you to some reach, Brahman, non-dualism and transcendence, no illusion, but Harikatha, Krishna Katha, Bhagavat Katha, oh, that's that what Visargo Janataga Vipru, that's another creation altogether. So that's even beyond the reach of the Vedas. I mean, you go to Braj, nobody's quoting the Vedas. Nobody knows any single verse from the scripture. But they personify the conclusion of that. Because the Vedas and the Upanishads say Krishna is God. Now you go to Vrindavan and try to sell that to any Brajavasi. Uddhava tried that, it didn't work. He tried hard. He knows very well the Shastra. He was Shastrabid. Uddhava knew the Vedas from head to toe, tip to toe, and he went to Vrindavan and tried to deliver this message to Nanda, Yashoda, Gopa. Oh, you are so fortunate. You have such a love for Krishna, who is God. And He was not successful. He didn't sell any book in Vrindavan. Nobody believed him. All of them thought, you are crazy. You have this reputation of being a great sage, but now you're coming here and telling us that Krishna is God. That makes no sense for us. We have direct experience that that's not the case. So the point is, the Vedas, the Upanishads are described as trying to attain Krishna. You have in the Bhagavatam and the prayers of the personified Vedas and so on. So the Vedas are trying to attain Krishna. They didn't, but they say Krishna is God. And on another side, you have Yashoda, who says Krishna is not God, and she has attained Krishna. She has Krishna trapped on her lap. He's totally trapped by the rope of her affection. So the conclusion is, who is more correct of the two? Of course, we are not denying that Krishna is God, but in the ultimate realization, the Vrajavasi's version is, for us, the ultimate Brahman, and they will... Of course, the Bhagavatam is saying Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if you understand that properly, at some point you will start shifting and thinking in another way. You will stop seeing Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead. You will start to feel attracted to see him like a whatever, the lover of Radha, the friend of Sri Dhamma, Subal, and the idea of God goes somewhere else. So yeah, that in connection to Brahma. And again, regarding the second part where Shastra is describing in advance the different descents every age, for each age, and yeah, this one in Kali Yuga, this one in Dwapara Yuga, and we could say, okay, Brahma was aware that in Dwapara Yuga, Krishna is coming. Yeah, of course. I mean, remember that before Krishna was born, I mean, Brahma went with all the devas and tried to pray to Bhagavan, please come. It's time. I mean, he knew. He even knew. He was the one instrumental in, it's time for you to come and perform your function. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstaparartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So he knew. Again, he knew, but he had his idea of, okay, who Krishna is, what the avatar is, how the avatar performs his function of chastising the demons, establishing dharma, but not having a picnic, eating with left hand and fully formal. That's weird. That was Brahma thinking. So that went beyond his head, basically. I mean, he had this knowledge. Krishna, I mean, he met Krishna at the beginning of creation. He was his guru, his father, his mother. He's everything in one sense. He was instructed by Krishna, received the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, received Gayatri, so many things. And he practiced, he internalized all that through sadhana, through so much time. He asked for Sakya, the time came for that. And Brahma didn't pass the test in one sense, but at the same time, he's passing the test, no, as we can see. So he was just small, like sleeping there. No? But yeah, for a moment he was like overwhelmed, because again, Vrindavan can be, and that's a very important point of the Bhagavatam. And this highest reality of Vrindavan, the most confidential secret of the Veda. And even if you have everything in place, you are a Brahma, you know all the Vedas, you know who will come as the Yuga avatar, you are calling him to come. When he got like a trailer of Vrajalila in Sakya Rasa, it was beyond his head, it was too much. And he was trying to prepare himself for that. But in the moment of the dark experience, he was overwhelmed by that. For a moment. And did what he did. And of course, we are now being blessed by the consequences of that. So we could say that, yeah, he knew on some level. But still, Krishna Leela can be pretty astonishing. At the end of his prayers, he's saying, Ho Bhagyam, Ho Bhagyam. He started like to speak like in ecstasy. How wonderful, how fortunate are these Vrajavasis who relate to you as friends, although you are the supreme, absolute, non-dual reality. They treat you as an equal, like a friend. What's their fortune? Who they are? Now, Brahma still has this Ajvara Gyan. He's aware you are God, but at the same time, he's attracted to how they are treating you in Vrindavan. This is like never seen before. So this is the main point of the Bhagavatam, like this psychology of Braj, that's very unique. You cannot find it anywhere else. So if we want that, we have to also prepare ourselves. That's the point. If we don't want to end up being bewildered and mistaking the whole Brajalila and trying to maybe some kidnapping and interrupting picnic. We don't want to interrupt Krishna's picnic. We want to support that from one role or another. So. Anyhow, some thoughts. I hope that helps. What? You have a question, Sadhvi? No? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So, I don't know, something else before finishing? We are almost in time, but there is something else. Yeah.
Sorry for taking time.
No, please.
You just mentioned the previous question. rather Giridhar's question, that Bhava Deha is coming. I was thinking of that it's explained how we don't go directly Vaikuntha. First Sadaka take birth in Gokul. So does it mean that this Bhava Deha comes at that point? Or it comes in the Sadaka, when in this life when the Sadaka is reaching Bhava? And that is it, like when you take like this birth, so called birth in Goku, that this is the this body that you had, this deha, it means that this is the one that you continue with in the spiritual
realm. Yeah, we spoke about that recently, but I think it was a Q&A in Spanish. I don't remember which language it was. So, but that topic is pretty much treated in detail by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Raga Varma Chandrika at the end. And basically he makes this point that we can, in this lifetime, reach certain... Of course, when I say this lifetime, can be...
Lifetimes.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's not that we have to take for granted, okay, in this lifetime I'll get my Bhava Deha. I mean, it can happen, but generally it takes some time. Most of our acharyas will mention it may take a few lifetimes, which is nothing in comparison to what will come. And the journey we have been coming from, 2-3 lifetimes, is like to receive such a gift is like, we should be embarrassed to be in pain so little, actually. So, but it is mentioned that whenever lifetime you attain Bhava, whenever that may happen, and on top of that Prem, which is of course the Bhava, is considered like a ray of the sun of Prem. Prema Suryamsu is described by Rupa Goswami. Bhava is a ray of the sun of Prem. So let's say in this lifetime someone eventually attains Prem, or in some lifetime. Nonetheless, Prem, although it may sound like it the topmost highest thing, to speak about Prem as the highest goal of life is still something generic. At least for us Gaudiyas, Prem is, yeah, Prem, but which type of Prem? There are developments of Prem. So especially regarding the developments of Prem, the idea is that there are so intense that for you to tolerate and deal with them, you need to receive very specific bhakti samskars right from birth to deal with them. So that's why this prescription is given of being born in the Prakat Lila, in the Bhoma Lila, in Gokul, whenever Krishna, in whatever planet Earth, in whatever Vrindavan, in planet Earth, where Krishna is executing his lila, that's happening always in some planet Earth, in some universe. So that Premi Bhakta will be born there, from the womb of the Gopika, Nityasiddha Gopi, and from the womb, it will start to receive Bhakti Samskars, from eternal associates of Bhagavan. And with that foundation, one will be able to go through the different developments of Prem, Sneha, Mam, Pranaya, Rag, Anurag, Bhav, Mahabhav, depending which is one's affinity, there will be a certain level of reach of Prem. So, and in that particular body that we will consider, yeah, Bhava Deha, one will eventually enter into the Golok, if you will, the Aparakat Lila, in the words of Jiva Goswami. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is describing that one is born in that body on earth where Krishna is performing his lila. He's that person is already born with prem, no? So you are already from the womb, you already have prem, but still you have to distill that essence of prem into other developments that are so ecstatic and emotionally intense that you need certain particular form to tolerate that intensity. And you need for that to receive bhakti samskar from the womb to create that particular framework to incorporate that in a way that is organic, natural. And you will be developing those in that lifetime, especially through separation. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes a point. Why? Because in the earthly lila, there is a point on the lila, as we know, that Krishna lives Vrindavan. Lives. He never lives, but in some form he lives, as we know. There is a manifest and one... So through the separation that happens in the earthly lila, that separation, experience of separation in particular, is the one who helps to create the final, if you will, development, stirring, churning of the heart to reach that maturity, no? That consummation of the love that then will take one to Golok, to the Nitya Lila, and will play out in the daily Lila with Krishna in Golok. So, yeah, that's basically what our acharyas. That's mostly a contribution by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The Goswamis do not speak too much about that. Rupa Goswami gives only one example in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu about someone with Vatsalya Bhav being born on earth and entering perfection through Brahma Vimohan Lila on earth. Interesting. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur really develops that. So yeah, that's the idea. No? And also some interesting idea, just to complicate things more, is that we have the parallel project prospect possibility of being born eternally serving Mahaprabhu in Nitya Navadvip. And which will be that form? Well, if indeed in this lifetime you attain prem, or in whatever lifetime you attain prem as a sadhaka, as a practitioner, that form is the one in which you will be serving Mahaprabhu in Gaur Lila as a young Brahmin. That's why we keep the pictures of our parampara in the altar, no? Because the altar represents like a window into eternity. So their pictures there, mean they are serving there. Of course, they will be younger than in the picture. Once it came to me, the idea, it would be nice to have pictures of them when they were like 12, 13 years, because that's the age you will have in the Nitya Navadvip. But it may be difficult. But anyhow, that's another layer of possibility in connection to the Gaur Lila. Yeah. Okay, so I think we can finish here. And for those who would like, tomorrow we have... Tomorrow and the day after tomorrow we'll have two classes.
Yes.
Morning lecture and evening. So tomorrow morning we have...
8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, what?
Is
Q&A or Brahma Stuti? Which is the order? I think it's Q&A in the morning and Brahma Stuti in the evening. On Sunday is Brahma Stuti in the evening, and Q&A in the evening. Yeah. So in the morning 8:30 and in the evening 6:30 tomorrow, and on Sunday 8:30 in the morning and 5 p.m. on Tarun's Yoga Shala. Okay. So, Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Giriraj Maharaj ki jai, Sri Sri Jagannath Baladev Subhadri ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Brinda ki jai, Gaur Pramana ki jai.